Hey Goombas, we're at Four State SlasherCon. I'm here with
Rebecca McKendry.
She's one of the former editors at Fangoria Magazine.
I was not an editor, I was actually a director. I was the executive director of marketing for like over a decade there.
What are you doing now?
Now I am editor-in-chief over at Blumhouse Films. We're the people who make like Purge, Insidious, Sinister, Paranormal Activity, The Gift. These are all our films, and so I'm now an editor-in-chief over there.
I have to see Insidious, and I've heard a lot of good things about Purge, so I have to see those things. I'm an old school horror fan. I think it's musical. I think with Paranormal Activity, they did the found footage very well. A lot of movie companies do not. A lot of our listeners might have heard our promo for Four State SlasherCon. It's about listeners about 2 or 3 episodes back. Spoke with Matt. I don't know if you feel this way as well, that a lot of these lower budget, or some of the higher budget performances too, they feel the found footage is kind of a cop-out, or...
You see a lot of found footage now, especially, I mean, it's one of the more predominant trends in the horror industry. And we especially see it on kind of the more lower budget end. And a lot of the filmmakers kind of say, oh, well, you know what, we can't afford nice cameras, we can't afford a really good scriptwriter. You know what, let's do it found footage. And it's got mixed things. Like, there's definitely an audience that appreciates it, but at the same time, there's a huge audience that doesn't. And I will say that in my own writing, I've always been really critical of found footage, because I would say, you know, if you're putting that much time in getting a crew together, and putting that much time in getting a cast and concept together, just turn the damn camera around, make it third person, and shoot with what you got. But then again, there are some films that actually work as found footage. Paranormal Activity did. Blumhouse released a film earlier this year called Unfriended, which I must admit, I was really critical when it first came out, and I wasn't even working at Blumhouse then. I kept calling it Facebook the movie, and I was so confused about what it was. And then I saw it, and they actually do like a really good job of kind of establishing, you know, what it is and how the cameras are going to work in it, and building a plot out of it. So there are times when I watch found footage and I go, you know what, that actually really worked. Like, we just did the visit, and it worked. And then there are other times I watch found footage and I'm like, God damn it, just quit faking the camera. Can I curse on your podcast?
Yeah, I can.
There are times that I'm watching these things and I'm just like, please stop shaking the camera. I'm going to be sick and I have to go take some Dramamine now.
As I told you, it's like, I like the VHS series, how they did that as an anthology, how they weeded everything together, wove everything together, and yet the ABC horror is the complete opposite. I hate it with passion, because it's, you know, they'll give you, all right, a book, and it's not, there's a book, only thing related to that word is, there's a book on screen, that's it, and it's like, really, it doesn't work.
You know, anthologies are another thing that are definitely kind of making a comeback right now in the horror genre. And it's the same thing as found footage, where sometimes they're done incredibly well, and people put a lot of care into them. Tales of Halloween is actually opening this weekend, and it's like one of the best films I've seen this year. Not just because I'm in it. If you blink, you're going to miss me in it. I just do a quick cameo. But it's actually a really well-crafted film, and the filmmakers put a lot of love and passion into it. And then a lot of times what we'll see now is, I have $10,000. I'm going to give $2,000 to five of my friends and see what they can come up with. And there's really no cohesion with it. Like, there's no, it's not a group effort for them trying to come up with a way to work together. And ABCs of Death, I don't necessarily think suffer from that, because I know that a lot of filmmakers involved really put a lot of effort into it. But what is difficult with ABCs of Death is usually with anthology films, you're going to have 4 segments, maybe 5. Or, you know, if you have more, they're going to be kind of connected. There's going to be some type of connective tissue between them. With ABCs of Death, you have 26 segments. So no matter how short and brisk they are, by the time it reaches, like, LMNOP, you're like, man, I've been here for, like, hours, like, days have gone by. just because of the way that it's punctuated, it makes it feel like it's longer than it actually is. And I felt the same thing when I was watching it. I was watching it going, man, some of these segments are great. But just because it's jumping around so much, I swear I've been sitting here for days.
One of the things that comes out of Matt is that the independents of that means the indie filmmakers that come up and like I told him is that it seems like they're trying nothing against mainstream like paranormal activities and urges for them. It's just that they're a lot of the fans are going towards the indie circuit or finding or a taste of what they need or kind of the aspect, hey, here's something new, or here's something that might have original content versus the remakes that are coming out. Nothing gets
purchased. And that's one of the things that Blumhouse does is we go to the indies for who we want to work with next. Like, you know, that's where we go for inspiration, you know, what the trends are and who we should be, you know, say, I want to make with this guy. So the indies are vital to everything running. The indies are also, the word itself has taken on a new meaning. Because if you look at something like everyone says It Follows from last year, that was an indie film and everybody loved it. Well, it wasn't really that indie because it was a $7 million production, which in terms of a horror film nowadays is like unheard of. No one makes seven, that's a huge amount. And then it ended up with Weinstein Company, which is like, I mean, that's like Tarantino. So the whole idea of what is indie anymore gets a little bit blurred because as soon as you have something that people are even remotely intrigued by, and the studios are going to step in and take you and, you know, elevate it to a whole new level.
That's one of the things that I was surprised about. One of my favorite, I don't want to say blue budget, turns out in my eyes it's not that cool. Overall, from the mainstream, it is. It was distributed by, I think, Fan Globe Magazine, who was... movie Slashers. I like that movie. I like that movie very well.
I was not aware that was one of ours. I should go back and check it out.
I think it was very done very well. And when I was listening to the commentary, I found out it cost, I think, close to $1 million.
You know, $1 million is not as much as you think it is in film terms. And this is a weird thing to kind of describe to people because people, and I even gave this talk yesterday where I was talking about how most horror movies being shot in Hollywood now. I'd say about $1 million, and people were like, man, that sounds like a fortune. It does sound like a fortune until you think that you are employing, let's just say it's a small shoot, even on a super small film shoot, something in Slashers or, you know, something that's small and indie, you're employing, I would say, roughly between 50 to 75 people full time for a 30-day stretch. And at that point, plus you have to feed them 3 meals a day, because usually that's kind of one of the only perks of being on a film set. You might be making buckets, but you get fed well. And so now you're feeding them. Plus you have to rent cameras, and camera rentals are astronomical. And one of the biggest expenses is always insurance, because if you have 75 people on a film set all running around with really expensive cameras, you have to get some, like, gangbuster insurance. And so, though a lot of people think, man, $1 million movies, you guys must be rolling in it. It's gone. Can you even blink? Now, $7 million, I'm kind of like, okay, you had some funds to play with there. But $1 million, it's gone so quick. Like, you don't even realize. I will say that the majority of the films that I'm seeing now fall into the million and below category. The large majority of the ones that aren't coming out of studios, and even some of the ones that are coming out of studios, because, again, it goes back to the movie that It Follows Well. Another one that did that was Your Next. Made for very low amounts by Lionsgate. So it's, you know, all of the lines between what's indie and what's not indie, what's low budget and what is, has gotten so blurred with the issues in the past decade. So it's kind of, it's interesting to be in the industry at this point.
$600 seems reasonably cheap, especially $1,000, $2,000 into the box of equipment, here's something that not only can the person that he himself do, he goes to be infinite.
I have seen some absolutely amazing horrors that we shot. I mean, you can do it with just about anything at this point. It's all, and I say this repeatedly, and I'll be saying it again in my panel this afternoon, it's all about coming up with a good idea to start with and having something top notch, and not just saying, I'm going to do a slasher film. Having something that's going to make it different and that are going to make audiences say, holy crap, I've seen slashers, but I've never seen that horror film that way that we did it. So it all starts with your idea, and anything past that is working. And because we are seeing, a lot of horror films right now. The amount of horror that is being made right now is insane. And a lot of people, you can see that they don't have the same passion that others do. That they kind of see it as almost like low-hanging fruit, like, oh, I hear horror's making these, I'm going to make horror films, I can always sell those. And then we see people who are making things that we're like, yes, okay, you obviously really care about the genre and care about the craft and your lot. An example that I could use is like zombie films. When zombies became all the rage about 3 years ago, we saw just this glut of zombie films come out. So many that we couldn't keep up with, and they all had the exact same plot, people in a house, zombies outside. And then something like The Battery comes out, and The Battery was made by just a small group of people who decided to make a zombie film. The movie's about two baseball players, one going through the zombie apocalypse, and it's one of these films where it's about the zombies, but it's not really about the zombies. And it was my favorite film of that year. So, it's just, I mean, that was a super low budget indie, had no studio connections when he made it. It ended up getting picked up by Scream Factory, and he's now doing a lot of work with a lot of other major companies because of that film. But, you know, it's just, he had the same capabilities and the same equipment as a lot of these other zombie films that came out. Actually, I'd say he had less equipment than a lot of the other zombie films that came out. But he did something that made the entire industry go, oh my god, hey, that was actually pretty good. This guy seems to actually have some big message that he wants to push across the screen. But because we are seeing such a glut in the horror film market right now, I will say it is making really informed consumers. And I think Netflix has a lot to do with this too, because when you've got, you know, when you can watch hundreds of horror films at your disposal at any given time, half of them, you know, on your phone even, it makes really informed consumers, so people become aware what they're looking at, and they can tell if this film is made with care and love by someone who really adores the genre and wants to see innovative stuff come out of it, versus somebody who's just, you know, pulling low-hanging fruit and going, hey, here, you know, zombies are huge right now. Let's just make a quick and dirty zombie film and see if we can sell it.
I think video on demand, like Netflix, I think there's a slasher app, Netflix-type app that came out a few months ago. It's helping that aspect because you have that availability. There's no, not just Netflix, I'm saying, because you watch this, here's a bunch of stuff that you might not be interested in. Here's this video on an app strictly for
Yeah, one of my favorite on-demand apps that has come out is Shudder. I really love Shudder. It's been curated by one of the guys I used to work with at Fango. He's one of my friends, Sam Simon. And he's finding just amazing stuff. And I love them because they're kind of getting like horror staples. But at the same time, they're really getting all of these like esoteric international films that people aren't familiar with. Or ones that just kind of need some rediscovery. Ones that you may not have heard of from the 50s and 60s. They're still totally badass, but you know, newer audiences might not be as acquainted with them. And so I love how they're creating that. It's just phenomenal stuff.
It's just, I think my co-host did want to agree back in the years ago, obviously before the internet became popularity, we had music groups in Seattle and in Florida that fans didn't know about the group in Seattle because it's the way they met. Now with the internet, the world's smaller, the music fans have been known to taste music from all across the country is myself, can now see a filmmaker somewhere out of Seattle or upstate New York or something like that, or here in West Virginia, we can taste these filmmakers easier.
I think that one of the best ways that we're getting exposure is not only through On Demand, which is true. I mean, we're finding these things through, like, Netflix and Amazon Prime. But I also think that kind of the zine mentality, like, when I was in high school, everything that I found out about horror and music, which were my two passions, were always through zines, which were other people's just little shoddy Xerox magazines that I would subscribe to, or through indie mailers. Like, I used to get all of these little indie magazines in the mail that would be like, you know, never-before-seen Mario Bava films available, and you'd send like $10 and they'd send you back a VHS tape, but that's how I was on so many films. Or with music, I used to go through Cleopatra Records, and I would find all of this like crazy equipment, industrial music through them that I would never find otherwise. And I think that that same kind of grassroots mentality is still in place. It's just moved over to places like Twitter and Facebook. And that's how I discover movies now, is like all the Twitter feed, and somebody will just say, "Holy crap, have you guys seen Goodnight Mommy?" And then I'm like, "Oh, I have it. Wait a sec, what's this? I need to see this." And I got that tweet like a year ago, and now it's like people in festivals by storm, so other people saw the tweet and said, "Holy crap."
We're not knocking on anything, but it, they're getting news about newer movies, independent stuff. Again, they're or smaller and getting the word out. And have, like you said, having that, have you seen this movie? Have you seen this movie? Check this movie out. And it's gone from me handing you a video cassette or a DVD that's been ripped like 15 times. And now it's, or you can say the movie industry is now copying, because the internet is music industry,
being shared with people from
the co-host, and now with digital, it's so much easier to share this movie.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, Fango, we've adjusted to this, as weird as that sounds. We're on the Fango website and the Twitter feed and the Facebook page and everything. We still do news posting. Oh my god, have you seen Goodnight Mommy? We just saw it at the Fango Festival. It's amazing. The magazine has shifted from what we used to. So instead of having, like, oh my gosh, they're releasing this new thing, because the magazine doesn't come out as often as, you know, people checking Facebook 5 times a day, we shifted the magazine almost to pure content, which means it's interviews. Okay, we all know that this cool little movie is coming now. We all know that this movie is getting remade. Instead of doing it as a news brief, let's interview the guy. Let's try to find another way to spin the information so that people are still interested in hearing about it and want to learn about it, but it's not as timely, topical, and quick to replies as you would find on the internet. And because of that, we've done fine. And this whole kind of shift from that all magazines have had from print to digital, Fango has weathered it beautifully because of that, because we were smart enough to say, let's rethink our content beforehand. And we have dedicated collectors. And our collectors don't want a digital edition of Fango. And I do say, we do have a good amount of digital subscribers, but our biggest bang is still printing the magazine and mailing it to people, because our subscribers want to hold a physical copy of the magazine. Like, it has a certain physicality and collectability to it. And so just because of the legacy that Fango has endured, people, you know, they want the physical copy. And because of that, we've been able to survive the whole digital changeover. And I mean, we're still really pumping our digital side. We have our website, we've got Twitter, and everything like that. But I mean, the magazine, we made sure that it still is something very special, and that it still is just
how it is. Back when I was in high school, not having funds for it. Again, I'd read it in the supermarket when my parents did shopping.
Uh-huh.
But like probably most kids in high school and junior high, and seeing ads for the independent, that gives the lower budget movies, and seeing, I want to see this. And months later, seeing it, or years later, seeing it in the video rental store. Yes, kids, they want to be a rental store.
Well, you gotta have time. Yes, we're showing our age.
Hey, everything that I saw, I still say, I saw every horror film I could get my hands on by the time I graduated high school, and every single one came from On Track Rental in Stephen City, which is seriously like 15 miles from here. It's now a pizza joint, but it was the greatest rental store because they did the car. I could rent whatever I wanted. I could watch out with, walk out with like Sean Lewis and porn, and the guy behind the counter would not care in the least. So, sorry, continue.
But that's seen years later, and it's just like, I remember seeing this net in Pangora, and now it's I have to pick up more. I have to read Pangora again. Not knocking the magazine at all. It's just, I would like to pick up a magazine. Change from when I was a teenager. Adult, maybe I can't wait. So
we tend to definitely kind of grow with people, and we have a certain readership that is with us their entire lives. They will be with us until they kick it, and they've been with us since they were 15. So I mean, we're 35 years old now. And then we have others that kind of wax and wane in their subscriptions, and we understand that, and we kind of and we're still kind of adjusting to the internet age just like everyone else. Trying to figure out, you know, what works on the website, how do you monetize a website? How do you get people, you know, to go to the website? We've discovered that over 90% of our traffic comes through Facebook. And now working on the Blumhouse site, we've discovered that most of our traffic is via the site on phones and iPads. So how does that make you rethink the way that you're putting stuff up online and the pictures you're using and how you're laying out the website? Because suddenly, not everyone's looking on it through a PC. You're only going to see this in like a 2-inch screen. What do you do? So
that's the thing, it's not just computers anymore with Netflix or phones. You also have the Roku devices, the Amazon Fires, the Apple TVs, the Xboxes, the screens.
And this,
you know, just it's the whole delivery, not to mention independents like yourself in a way, can test out ideas via YouTube. So it's you have not only do you filmmakers like yourself have these tools to viewers have new ways of experiencing a new way of watching, not just digitally. Because as you're building the film, you can post behind the scenes on YouTube. So it's
And it's actually a really fascinating time to be part of all this, because there's this great tech war going on in Hollywood right now between companies like Amazon and iTunes and, even like Xbox Live and Vudu and all of these different companies, because me as a filmmaker, when the distributor picks up my film, they have so many choices of where to go, but a lot of companies will say, you know what, if you're going up on Amazon, we don't want you to go up on iTunes for at least a month. And so it's a hard decision. And so at this point, I'm really interested to see who's going to win. And then some of the companies have said, we're not even competing. I mean, if you look at like Full Moon, they just made their own channel. And they're like, we're just going to do our own thing over here. If you want to subscribe, we're online, we're over here. Come join us at the party. But, you know, y'all do your thing and we're over here.
That's right. Their channel is geekworldorder.com. It might be geekworldordersites.com. I'm sure he'll give me the proper link when I get home. A lot of his posts there, and what I did was reference to how when people my generation grew up with before cable, everything within independent stations was syndicated. And then you had shows like Star Trek, and then that being the juggernaut, so being, and then you had the Babylon 5, the scene of Hercules, the forefront of a new syndicated independent shows coming forefront. Now it's TV, now it's digital. You have Amazon, iTunes, independent channels saying, we want your content.
Oh yeah, and they're producing their own content now. Yes. Like Amazon, Netflix, Hulu have become just as big as producers of content as anybody else, and they're doing just as well. Yeah, I produced a Netflix show for a few years ago that is only available on their host channel on YouTube, Blood and Guts, and you guys are like spending this much on it, but yeah, it's an amazing and it functions just like a regular channel. So I don't know, I haven't had cable in 2 years now, so I don't even know how terrestrial television works anymore. I still watch the same stuff. I mean, I still, you know, watch the American Horror Story just as it's going on right now. Well, that might just be LA, but I know my cable in LA was like $150.
It's at least, you know, bare minimums, it's at least $40. Without a movie channel. In essence, I'm getting everything, almost everything you're getting.
And more.
And I'm getting a movie channel for $20 a month. If anything, if I want to, because of a few rights issues in the industry, I might have to season pass it. That's my smart head. But it's still way too cheap on a yearly basis than someone paying for a dish. So I guess I'm taking internet out of it. Maybe because I'm going online through a cable provider out of the equation, but it's still cheaper.
I don't have that anymore. Whether or not I was watching on my television online, I don't have internet anyway. So that's just kind of the cost of doing business in this day and age generally. So
yeah. Is everything you're coming out with as
I have my podcast, which is through Geek Nation Network, POV, which I co-host with Rob, who's also from Longhouse, and Elric Kane from Goodbye Horror. And then I'm still part-time at Moria, and I'm now full-time at Blumhouse. So check out Blumhouse.com to check out all the great stuff that we're doing. And
was that the notification that you gave us?
Yep, so, I think it is.
I'll put all the links in the show description. So as soon as this gets posted, I'll send you the link.
Thank you guys so much. Enjoy the rest of
the time. So I'll plan on it and come see you at the conference if you want to be there.
I will.
You'll see me pulling out the little hair I have. So again, thank you so much.
Thank you guys.